Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
DJ with the toss to Mixon, running left, and he's in! Touchdown, Houston, Joe Mixon. 3-yard TD run.
I like the end zone dance, too. Love it.
Yeah, it starts with our offensive line. Like, the way they controlled the line of scrimmage was awesome, right? And then Joe, he stepped up big time for us. Well, we needed him to run the ball. He did. They knew it was run. We knew it was run. And he still made the play. So, man, just excited to have him on our side. You know, we've seen it all training camp, and it was exciting to see him do it here his first game.
Yeah, you saw it all training camp, and nobody else got to see Joe until yesterday. That was a whole lot of fun, man. You know, if that Joe Mixon, I forget who said it to me. I apologize if you're listening, whoever said it to me last night. If it was a caller, it might have been Clint. I think it might have been Clint Sterner when we were talking. He's like, you know what Joe Mixon did, Chief? He killed training camp dead. Like, he proved he ain't need no training camp.
Well, for running backs especially, that yeah. is, man, any kind of soreness or whatever, if you got a veteran, just those guys have a limited snap count in life, yeah. I think. You just got to be really extra careful about it. Especially, man, look, he got 30 carries yesterday. I guess this hadn't even really occurred to me, but looking at the length of the season and what have you, there's no way in hell he can go 30 carries every single game.
No.
So, I mean, that is something where at some point, look, if teams are going to really try to take away the deep stuff, that you got to do what they did a little bit yesterday. Your wide receivers step in. Tank Dell's the second leading rusher on the team. Damian Pierce had 3 carries for 16 yards and looked good on all of them. So that's so far so good. I'm 100% honest when I say I hope I was dead wrong about my Damian Pierce concerns. I would love to be just an absolute idiot on that. And so far so good. But, right, like that was a very, very good start. At some point, he can't be getting 30 carries per game.
No. Joe, tell us about the season you ran for 3,500 yards. Well, I carried the ball 512 times.
And I never walked again. Right. So they do have a 3-year deal with him, you know? I'd like to see the end of this thing.
Yeah.
I thought that as far as his dance, I had asked on Twitter what dance that was. I don't think it was a black fraternity step or anything.
Okay.
Sometimes usually when I don't know a dance, people are like, oh, yeah, that's a cue dog thing or something. I think that was an original. I think that might have been a Joe Mixon original. I'm not sure. Somebody text in if you know what that dance was. I tried it a little bit last night, but then I felt a groin tear coming on.
They've got so much rehearsed dance stuff between, not just with CJ and guys, but other guys have their dances with each other. I'm like, man, don't take up too much of the hard drive, man.
I need to know before I start to try to learn the dance for TikTok if it's a black fraternity dance, because I don't want to get on there and be like, you know, disrespecting anybody.
Insensitive, yeah.
Yeah.
So this was Joe Mixon. This was Joe Mixon back in training camp. And Seth, as you pointed out many times, that Joe Mixon last year was a little miscast because of how Cincinnati ran the ball. They ran a lot out of shotgun last year, which is, you know, maybe not suited best to Joe Mixon's running style. They ran a lot more yesterday, a ton, obviously, with CJ under center. A lot of I formation. We'll hear Joe talking about a fullback here in just a second. But remember this back in training camp. This was Joe Mixon, day 2 of training camp, talking about, he mentions the Cincinnati Bengals.
I know for a fact, as long as I'm in great position to win, like, it's going to be night and day compared to how I was in Cincinnati. You know what I'm saying? So, like I say, I'm very optimistic with how this offense will be ran, how I'll be using this offense.
Okay, and one game in, the optimism is fulfilled here, man. 30 carries,
man, all this stuff. 59. You know, we talk about scheme fit and all that, but in the zone runs, boy, the offensive line looked much better than they have. Going back to last season when this offense was new, they look like it's starting to click for them. They're starting to get a feel. There were some glitches. There were some times where the adjacent offensive linemen weren't really on the same page, but that was encouraging just because there were plenty of examples of them being perfectly choreographed and the timing was awesome. It was like a Joe Mixon touchdown celebration. The times, like Grover Stewart's big tackle, that was more the communication and the teamwork between Laremy Tunsil and Kenyon Green than it was anything else. It wasn't like they were getting physically beat. So I'm encouraged that it's actually going to get better, and Joe Mixon just has a really good feel for knowing where the cutback lane is, understanding the blocking scheme in front of him. It was very, very nice to see.
Joe Mixon called it a grown man running game yesterday in the post game. Yeah. You know, it's not the running out of shotgun. It's guys lining up, busting each other in the mouth. Here was Mixon. Mixon with a little shout out to a rookie as well.
No doubt. That's exactly what it was. I mean, you know, I've been on the lineman, you know, training camp. I wasn't in there too much in training camp, but I'm just letting them know what I see, how to hit and how to be, man. And they doing everything they can to open them holes and do everything that we got to make them, however we can, to make them pay, man. And, first off, special shout out to Stover. I mean, he made critical blocks. Them guys on the edges, they make crucial blocks, and we made them pay. But, you know, like they said, the grown man football, I'm just happy. This is my first time really probably seeing the fullback, and I can't remember the last time I seen a fullback in front of me, man. So it's a hell of a feeling, man, being on the winning side of the things, and I'm just glad I'm on this side of, you know, playing with Houston, man.
That's exactly – I was so happy when I heard him talk about how he'd been working with the offensive line, because that it's so crucial. And the offensive linemen sometimes don't, you know, they don't really necessarily understand what the running back is seeing and vice versa. That's why, especially in zone runs, but any run scheme, you know, where old school blocking, it's a little bit more straightforward. In zone, there's a lot of teamwork between not just the running back and the offensive line, but the quarterback and the running back, and all of those little things that Joe Mixon has just a wealth of experience with. He can tell those guys, look, there was one play where Kenyon Green trucked Zaire Franklin, just made a fool out of Zaire Franklin. Juice Scruggs did a really good job of just taking the defensive tackle where he wants to go, just riding him down the line. You don't have to physically dominate guys. Sometimes it's just a matter of like, oh, okay, you took that step. I'm going to help you along your way. It's kind of like if you're escorting somebody out of a club and you kind of get them in that arm bar
right.
And just walk them right out.
Moving them, yeah. It makes sense.
Move along, drunk fella.
Makes sense. Third and three, had to have it. Texans get it by giving the ball to Joe Mixon, and the game is over. Here was Joe Mixon on the clinching play, the play that put the game away.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, it was meant to go front side, and basically the linebacker basically screened over the top, and I just canceled his gap replaced his gap where he was supposed to go, and made him pay for it. So I'm just glad I was able to close it out, you know, in a crucial moment.
Yeah, and look, that play too. I still have concerns about Damian Pierce, but he looked good yesterday. But there was a play in the preseason where I broke it down and I showed where the cutback lane was. And when you stop the screenshot, what people kept saying is like, "Yeah, but there's a linebacker there." Like, no, but watch. The linebackers are flowing. Like, that's where it looks like, if you look at a screenshot of it, it looks like there's a linebacker in the hole. But no. That's going to change. Arian Foster was so brilliant at that, because there were times where it looked like he had the defense on a string. You know, like he could just snatch the defense with a yo-yo and then cut back against the grain. Joe Mixon's got that yo-yo ability.
Mm-hmm.
He walks the dog with the defense.
Yep. Great
kids,
to see.
The yo-yo was a toy that we used to use back before we had so much electronic gadgetry.
Right.
Yeah.
Yo-yo.
It was amazing. It was a wheel on a string, and
yeah.
You could spin it.
Hours of fun.
You could never
fun.
Do as much as you thought you could.
But. Hours of fun. Yeah, you needed skills to do the real stuff, where you rock the baby and things like that.
Well, there are no YouTube tutorials. You had to be like, you're looking at like a diagram on like a piece of paper that like Yo-Yo gave you.
It was like a pamphlet they gave you with it. Like, yeah, it's no.
Slinky. Dude, you could pull so much.
If you could yo-yo back in the day.
In my 12-year-old mind, that's what it was.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn how to yo-yo, and then all the ladies are going to come up begging.
And they're
going
to come over to my house and play with my slinky up and down the stairs. Yeah, yeah.
Never get that to work either.
So, Mixon, big story.
49 years old, same.
Same, samesies. If the Texans had lost this game, if for some reason they don't convert that third and three, they give the ball back to the Colts, and Anthony Richardson throws another 55-yard pass to put them in field goal position, and they win the game 30-29, we would have been spending the entire post-game show and at least half of this show talking about the just complete cluster bleep on the part of many people at the end of the half of this game.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. First of all, I did not like, for independent of all the botched refereeing and communication that went on, For a coach who approached this game pretty aggressively, D'Amico Ryan's going for it on fourth down a couple of times,
yeah,
especially down in goal to go, going for two early in the game, which we've had a lot of people ask on the text page, should he have been doing that? For a coach who was doing very aggressive things, the overall approach to that last drive of the first half was very conservative, I thought. Almost like they were playing for three, I thought.
I think they were, you know, trying to burn time because they have this rushing attack and they can actually do that now.
Yeah.
And, you know, and put yourself in a position to score, but definitely secure the field goal. You're right. I think that was, I was cool with the approach. I was fine. I was like, all right, yep, just to, you know, take it down. But then, regardless of everything else that happened and what the official claims that he told CJ that the clock would be running at the snap,
yeah.
But I like that official had already established that he's a poor communicator, so I don't take his word for that.
Yeah.
But they were going to run a play. It's 5 seconds. You can't even take it. You can't take a shot at the end zone and expect there to be any time on the clock after that point if it's not a touchdown.
Well, they semi-ran the play. Like, the clock had run out. They were trying to get, like, 3 or 4 more yards. Like, CJ got the snap and immediately threw it towards the sideline.
Yeah.
You know, I think they were just trying to pick up because it was a 55-yard field goal.
With 5 seconds left, that's still kind of dicey.
I totally agree with you. I'm just saying that they weren't taking a shot at the end zone is all I was saying.
Oh, I got you. Right. Yeah. But I'm saying even if, like, no matter – to me, the only thing – I wouldn't want to risk the 5 seconds.
I'm
with
you.
Guy gets tackled and somebody's got him wrapped up on the sideline or something. I just don't – just kick the field goal there.
No, you and I are on the same page with that. Like, yes, with 5 seconds, and even if the clock were running and they told you it was running, have CJ in there just to spike it and then bring the field goal team onto the field.
No, because what I would have been hoping was that maybe they had something on the defense that in that moment, in my mind, the only way you run a play is if you feel like you've got something for them based on their tendencies that is that's got a better than average chance for a touchdown.
Right.
But like they did in the first play of the game last year.
Yes.
But that part of it, I can't completely excuse them. Except that everything was so random and screwed up at that point that and everything was so off that's just what happens when everything goes to pot. D'Amico has been incredibly good with his game management for the most part. That was a really weird one.
That was an outlier, I think. Yeah. What injected the most confusion into the whole thing, I think, was when the referees it was a short completion to Dalton Schultz. Honestly, I don't even know why New York was getting involved in the first place. It was such an inconsequential play that they ended up upholding, by the way. They didn't overturn it. They upheld it. New York, inside the last 2 minutes, the review's got to come from the booth, and they review this play. And once they review it, they decide to put 15 seconds back on the clock. They decide
I was glad that didn't make any sense.
Made no sense. It benefited the
whatsoever.
Texans.
It benefited
the Texans. Instead of the clock being at like 6, they put it at 15. And this is where it got confusing, is that's where Shane Steichen calls a timeout because he has some to burn, and he calls the referees over like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
And so it was the right thing to do because somebody corrected it.
Yeah.
And burn the 10 seconds. You had to do a 10-second runoff, I guess. But because of that, the timeout never, you know, the timeout got wiped away and the clock was running when the ball got played. If this sounds confusing, I apologize. Seth and I talked to each other before the game. We're like, we got to reset this topic. But resetting the actual play and what all went on, if you didn't watch it, is the most confusing stuff ever. Just know that the referees communicated poorly, I think, with the two teams. The Texans probably should have known that the clock was going to wind as soon as the ball got placed with 5 seconds left. What ended up happening was the Texans ended up ending the half without getting a field goal attempt. You know, they left 3 points potentially off the board.
Yeah, the one thing I'd say there is that they claimed afterwards that they told CJ that the clock was going to be running. I don't trust that their communication skills were correct in that moment.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
Because that is what there's no CJ did not operate as if he knew the clock was going to be running.
That's
so
right.
So I highly doubt that they actually told CJ the appropriate thing.
And I think CJ's a good listener. I think if somebody had told him that, he would have known. I think he's a good listener. I think he's attentive. I don't think he didn't pay attention in class, except when he was watching YouTubes of Drew Brees.
That's what these older women appreciate about him. Yeah. For a young man, he's a very good listener. Yes.
He's attentive, yes. Here's CJ on his version of what happened at the end of the half.
Week one, everybody's rusty. So I'm rusty. Rusty is the whole, you know, I think the officials told us one thing, but, you know, we got another. And it's up to us to really make the situation right. My job, you know what I mean? So I got to be better right there. And that's something we can definitely learn from, you know what I mean? I definitely don't think it's the end of the world, but those points could have cost us, you know what I mean? So we definitely got to be better.
I think that, I guess in that moment, if CJ's going to take the responsibility on himself, perhaps maybe it's like, okay, you do have time here to just stop, like, have the official really spell it out here, you know? But at the same time, on offense, you're trying to catch the defense off guard as much as possible.
Yeah.
I blame, and CJ, and this is because, look, CJ doesn't want to give up $50,000 for criticizing the officials or what have you. You're never going to get the straight story out of everything.
Right.
Because coaches and players are very hesitant to criticize the officials.
Yep. I think you and I are in agreement that the one area here where the Texans definitely, where we questioned the decision, was to even try to run a play there with 5 seconds.
Yeah, because of what happened, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's just too much that can go wrong.
Yeah.
You don't know exactly what's going to go wrong, but there's too much that can go wrong over the course of 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Unless, my only was if they had something that they felt like, all right, we feel like we actually got a good shot at the end zone.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Couple texts, and then we'll get to acknowledge me. This is a good one, Seth. I am definitely curious your thoughts on this, and I know you haven't had a chance probably to fully rewatch the game. They didn't put up a lot in the way of stats, but we have a texter asking, did Will Anderson Jr. and Danielle Hunter play well in this game?
I thought they did because for this reason. The reason that two of your defensive tackles have the two sacks in the game was because they did a really good job of a disciplined, compressed pocket. There was one play where Anthony Richardson seeped out to the right, and I would put that actually on the defensive tackle, should have replaced, because I think it was Danielle Hunter took an inside move on that play. And when you've got veteran defensive tackles, usually it's like when you're more of a run stuffer variety, you've got kind of always got to have your defensive end in the peripheral. And that when you see him go inside, you go out to replace.
Oh, okay.
And they did a good job of that for the most part. Foley Fatukasi ended up getting, I think his sack was off of that, where he replaced the defensive end.
Yeah.
But for the most part on the day, they did a good job of that. One of those, I think it was Mario Edwards' sack, Will Anderson was like bull rushing the right tackle right into the quarterback. So with a mobile quarterback compressing the pocket, making it really uncomfortable for him, all of that, I thought they did a good job. So, yeah, I haven't gone back and watched each snap yet or anything. But on the day, I felt pretty good about it, including some of Anthony Richardson's really spectacular throws were under duress.
Yeah.
You know,
the 60-yard one, Danielle Hunter's walking the right tackle right into his lap.
Right, right. So, you know, that's on Jimmy Ward. We saw this with Jimmy Ward last year late in the season, couple plays that they got beat deep for no good reason.
Yep.
It wasn't even an athletic thing. It's just kind of an awareness thing. That's the huge blemish from yesterday, these huge shots that the defense gave up, which was the same issue they had last year. Play really good defense for a long time, and then all of a sudden,
This game should not have been as close as it was. You know what I mean? Like play to play, the Texans won a vast majority of the plays compared to the Colts. It's just that literally, the Colts scored 4 touchdowns. 2 of them were plays of 54 yards or more. Yeah. The other one was set up by a 55-yard or 57-yard prayer on 3rd and 15. And the other one was set up by a blocked punt that made it a 5-yard touchdown. Like this, those are complete outlier plays that just, you know, it's not going to happen every week.
And for anybody wondering, I know the first tendency is to blame the cornerback. Look, on that deep, deep, deep touchdown, that was like immediately after the play, you saw Jimmy Ward tap his own chest.
Yeah.
That was 2/3 of the way across the field from Derek Stingley's alignment and quarters coverage. Yeah. It was that Jimmy's got to get back there. Now, the cover zero blitz where where Stingley just flat out let A.D. Mitchell run past him.
Yeah.
And you're only saved by, Anthony Richards not genuinely being a good NFL quarterback. Yeah. I mean, that's right there. That's the game if they connect on a very easy touchdown pass there.
Yep. All right. You can text in 713-572-4610. You're right. There were a couple like that with Richardson. Man, he giveth and he taketh away for sure. All right. Let's do some acknowledge me. Let's acknowledge some of the big performances from the weekend. We got some Texans in here. We got a little Astros in here. I also will acknowledge something that happened in college football this weekend. I'm a big enough man to do that, but let's get to it.
Acknowledge me.
That's what we hit each time we acknowledge somebody. Let's start with the Texans offensive line.
Acknowledge me.
Probably acknowledged in the best way possible after the game by Stephon Diggs. Here was Stephon Diggs on the Texans offensive line.
O-line. You got to give the O-line his credit. I mean, we get all, the hoopla. We got the celebrations and all that. But the game is won up front. Playing on the other side of the scrimmage, the line of scrimmage is huge. Our O-line dropped their nuts when they had to. Came out with a dub. Joe didn't do it by himself. But, you know, it's just a game changer when you can run the ball with 4 minutes left, 3 minutes left. Get those two big first downs. You ain't got to put it in the air. You're on to something.
Stephon Diggs sounds so excited there at the end. When you don't have to put it in the air and you can keep it on the ground, you're doing something right there, and he's right.
Honestly, and so yesterday, Stephon Diggs had two touchdowns. This is what I predicted, was it not? That you're not going to be able to predict which guy has the most yardage in any given game amongst these wide receivers, but I think all of them are going to have more opportunities for touchdowns because there's room to run. Stephon Diggs wide open on a freaking slant. You know, that doesn't have that
wide open.
When they were using, and they were using Stephon Diggs on shorter stuff in the same way that Buffalo was last year, the difference is that there's room to run.
On a slant,
you know?
On a slant inside the 10.
Right.
It was a 9-yard touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah. So not to take away from, and then on the sideline, early in the game, remember they showed on the sideline, Stephon Diggs is, he's saying something, I think he was saying, My bad.
Yeah.
It very looked clear like he was saying, my bad. But he speaks, he's so animated when he speaks that I could easily see somebody from Buffalo lip reading that as like, I'm sad. Yeah. You know, it's just, he does it all the time. He's very animated.
Very animated.
And people are going to see it how they see it. But like, I think he's always communicating positively. And yesterday was maybe not the best example where like, hey, it's not going to be any big deal because he did have two touchdowns.
Yeah.
But I think that he's happy to be on a functioning offense that's doing things the way they're supposed to do. The Bills' rushing attack was largely Josh Allen-based and has been for a long time. This is something the Bills haven't been able to do the last couple of years, is really run the ball conventionally when they need to run the ball.
Yeah, neither of the Texans, but they were able to yesterday, and it was nice. But, you know, while we're on Diggs, let's acknowledge Diggs.
Acknowledge
haven't done that
me.
Yet. He had a couple touchdowns, including this was a big one, man. DeMeco going forward on fourth and goal from the 2. I like this call by DeMeco at the time, and I love this play.
Stroud in the gun. Mixon to his left. Here's the snap. CJ stepping to his left. Throws to the end zone. Caught. Diggs. Touchdown number 2. It's a beauty. And the Texans are about to go up 2 scores again.
Here was DeMeco Ryans on Stephon Diggs.
Same. Steph was Steph. Like, he showed up in the big time moments. Got a touchdown for us. Like, that's who he's been, right? And I'm excited to have him, and he shows what he can do for us.
All right, so that was DeMeco. Seth, you and I were out at all these practices at training camp, and there were so many times where the Texans threw that out route that CJ threw to Diggs right there. Now, they oftentimes not at the 2-yard line, you know, in a fourth down situation like that. But, and it's not just Diggs, it's Tank and Nico too. Like, I just marvel, like, that's not as easy as they make it look.
No. I mean,
they make it look so easy.
And it's Diggs route running, too.
Yeah.
And this is where the stuff that I think the Bills offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, saw. I think he saw the potential for stuff like that. The Bills just didn't have the offense to, and the Bills offense got better after Joe Brady took over. But you can see where this is the exact type of thing that I think that they're probably envisioning with Stephon Diggs, but they just couldn't capitalize on it with that assortment of talent up in Buffalo, to where you can be better as an offense, but also Stephon Diggs is still going to get his. And this is where when you have the deep threat with Nico and Tank, but then also the stuff underneath, the way you can spread the coverage out in the red zone especially is just different. And that's where I mean, it's going to be a different guy every week. It really is. So Tank Dell might have 3 touchdowns on 27 yards receiving next week.
Yep.
You know, Nico Collins at some point is going to get a couple touchdowns on 33 yards receiving.
Yep.
It's really exciting to think about the possibilities.
Yes, and it feels like all those receivers are bought into that being the situation. Yep. You know, that's the best part.
And since I ended up making it about Stephon Diggs when Stephon Diggs acknowledged the offensive line,
yeah.
I would say especially Juice Scruggs and Kenyon Green, because those were the guys we're going to watch the most.
Acknowledge them, Seth.
They did. They went through puberty yesterday. Somewhere during training camp, I won't use the same phrasing that Stephon Diggs did. But, yeah, they looked like full-grown men out there, and it was nice to see. Kenyon Green threw Zaire Franklin out of the bar on one Joe Mixon.
Dude, yeah, go look at
it. And I know Zaire Franklin is just going to be that's going to fuel him for the next 3 years of his life.
That was on the video you sent to me before the show. Did you post that, or is that from your YouTube?
That's from YouTube. I'll post it on Twitter here.
Okay,
after the show.
Post that video.
I don't want to multitask and destroy everything.
No, it's all good. Yeah. It's all good. It's good stuff. Framber Valdez.
Acknowledge me.
While Justin Verlander gives up 8 earned runs yesterday, Framber Valdez continues to be arguably the best pitcher in all of baseball over the last month and a half. 7 shutout innings on Friday versus the highest scoring offense in baseball to that point. He was dominant. 2 hits, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts. He was great. His last 7 games, Seth, he has 5 wins, an ERA under 2, 55 strikeouts. He's got a whip. Walk hits per inning pitched of 0.70, which is microscopic. That's less than 0.7 base runners per inning. Since 2020, he leads all of Major League Baseball with 58 wins. I think Michael Schwab posted this. Since 2020, Framber Valdez is the winningest pitcher in baseball, and he's got the 4th best ERA. In the playoffs since 2020, he's got the most playoff wins, most innings pitched, most strikeouts in that time. So now, Framber's had some clunkers in the playoffs over that time, but the most impressive part to me is just he's back. You know, there was that 2022 Framber is back in the building again.
Yeah, as we've got so much fear and worry about Verlander and what he's doing right now, Framber is looking like the old consecutive games, quality starts, yeah, games pitched record and all of that. You know what else was nice to see? Blanco being used as a reliever. So
it was good.
There we go. Yeah.
5 strikeouts in 2 innings, man. He was good.
You kind of forget that was his role at one point.
Sure.
You know, that's it's not like this is some huge sea change in his methodology or anything, but if we could just get over the minor detail of Verlander pitching like a major leaguer again, then we'll be good. Sometimes I look out there and I watch Verlander, I'm like, oh, is this one of those minor league call-ups that we've had to rely on? But no, it's actually Verlander,
Justin,
one of the all-time greats,
future Hall of Famer. Yeah. Kyle Tucker came back this week, and that was good. Let's acknowledge Tucker.
Acknowledge
for
me
coming back from his injury and for running wind sprints on the field after the Friday game, while Friday fireworks were going on. So you got the whole crowd there watching fireworks after the Friday night game. You know, they turn all the lights off in the stadium, and they're shooting off fireworks over the left field wall there. And there's Tucker out in the outfield running wind sprints while everybody's watching the fireworks. It was a pretty funny visual. All right, let's get to these last couple. Saquon Barkley.
Acknowledge me.
24 carries, 2 rushing, 24 carries, 109 yards. He had 2 touchdowns on the ground, 1 receiving touchdown. Here's what the final touchdown sounded like.
At the 3-yard line, Barkley in the backfield once again on 2nd and 1. Barkley takes the handoff straight through the middle, pounding forward in the middle of the field, and he is in for the touchdown.
All right, Westwood 1 on the that audio courtesy of Westwood 1. You heard that game right here on Friday night on Sports Radio 610. The guy that we need to check on this morning, and probably every morning from now until the time he's no longer with us, is Giants owner John Mara. Let's rewind, go back in the rewind machine, and recall Hard Knocks offseason, where Joe Shane, the GM of the Giants, is basically lying to John Mara's face about the Saquon Barkley free agency situation.
What's the latest? Just on the Saquon thing.
I just got a text that Chicago's driving the price up and Philly's out. I don't know if that's true or not.
Mm.
which I don't know if I'll make a couple of calls. I don't even know if that's gonna happen, but
I have a tough time sleeping if Saquon goes to Philadelphia. I'll tell you that, as I've told you, just being up. I have been around enough players, so, but he's the most popular player we have by far.
Yeah.
We should point out the Giants got blown out at home by the Minnesota Vikings yesterday.
Joe Shane is so fired, man.
He's a dead man
walking. If
Saquon
Barkley goes off against the Giants, like, he might get fired in the booth. Joe Shane, the problem with this, if you guys didn't watch Hard Knocks offseason, it was awesome. I can't wait for whichever team desperately tries not to have this next year but has it. I can't wait to watch that team. Joe Shane is going to get fired. Might have gotten fired anyway. But specifically because of he spent that entire series trying to convince everybody in the building, all his scouts, everybody else, that there's no way anybody else really wanted Saquon Barkley. Certainly not the Eagles. It didn't make any sense for the Eagles to take Saquon Barkley. All of this. And then Saquon Barkley, it's one thing it's helping that, look, I'm also being proven wrong on Saquon Barkley. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay healthy. But, man, it's not looking good for Joe Shane.
It is not. It's going to be fun to watch. All right, last one. I'm a big enough man to acknowledge Northern Illinois University football.
Acknowledge me.
Play it, Ben. Final play of the game. Let's go.
He's lining it up. 5 seconds left. NIU up 16-14. 62-yarder. Snap, hold, Jeter's kick. It's blocked! It's blocked! It's blocked! Picked up by NIU! Picked up by NIU! The Huskies have done it! The Huskies with the biggest upset in NIU history! They come to South Bend, Indiana, and they knock off the number 5 team in the country. NIU 16, Notre Dame 14. The football gods were shining down on NIU.
Dude, local small college town radio calls are the best.
Yeah, yeah.
Best.
Especially, you're from that region of the country. Notre Dame's the big gushing, like everybody, oh, they're so great. And just, even though they don't generally do much, sorry, Sean.
Hey,
sucks.
Man, I'm a big enough man to, you got to kick a man while he's down. I was big enough to acknowledge Northern Illinois.
You were kicking a lot of Aggies while they were down last week.
Was I pretty obnoxious?
Get your comeuppance.
Okay.
You couldn't hide it. It's the same way when New England people, back when the Patriots were awesome.
Yeah.
That they couldn't understand how smug they came off. Yeah. You were that way.
People are asking me, look at the text, Sean, how are you doing after the ND game? I'm fine. I'm not saying this because they lost and it's like, oh, I didn't care anyways. You can't fire me. I quit. No, it's not one of those things. I don't get as emotionally attached to Notre Dame football as I used to. If they went to the playoff this year, I'd be rooting for them and whatnot. I was way more about, my Notre Dame friends aren't going to like to hear this, I was way more into what was going on yesterday up in Indianapolis than I was what was going on in South Bend on Saturday. I actually love the post game of this Notre Dame loss. The coach of NIU, Thomas Hammack, who has been there for, this is his sixth year as the head coach, he played there, this is the only head coaching job I would take, that kind of thing. This was a cool post game interview on the field.
Coach, I can sense that you need a moment. Top 5 opponent. This is NIU's first win against a top 10 opponent ever. And for people who need context, you wore this jersey. It's deep for you. Why?
You know, I'm so proud of our kids, the coaches, just everybody. They believed. They believed. And we came here and got it done.
Man, age of NIL and the transfer portal. Yeah. I love me a good Mac school with a crying head coach afterwards.
He's a guy that was, was he in the NFL before he took that job?
I think he was. They were telling that story like he was an NFL assistant and this is the only job he would have left the NFL for. Yeah.
There were a lot of, there's a lot of really good coaches out there at smaller schools who have been there for decades that just, they would never leave because they're fully enjoying the collegiate experience and love working with the kids and everything. And, I mean, in this day and age, it's harder and harder. Because, like, Northern Illinois, probably going to be a couple kids that transfer based on that their performance in that game.
I thought the same thing, Seth. Yeah. I'm like, oh, it's this happy family. And now these kids are getting calls from agents at SEC schools.
Yeah.
Sean,
you and I both went to schools that were last nationally relevant in football in the 1920s. And sometimes it's easier. You can kind of look at that school's endowment. And meanwhile, while you're fielding calls from fundraisers who tell you how much money they need, you're like, go die.
Yeah.
You guys are doing, you don't even know. You're trying to find find out ways to spend that money because you're having a hard time staying under the nonprofit category. It's easier to distance yourself.
Thomas Hammack was the Ravens running back coach for 5 years, from 14 to 18, and then he left to go back to his alma mater. So that's a cool story. I hate that it happened to my school, but I think everybody else loves that it happened to my school, and it's a cool story, so I'm here for it. All right, last segment coming up, and then we're going to hand it over to what I would imagine is an exuberant Texans Monday here on Sports Radio 610 with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. Oh, by the way, quick acknowledgement for Vandy and Johnny.
They
both said before the game on Friday on Texans All Access, it's going to take 28 points to win this game. 29-27 final score. Good job, fellas. Way to go. We will not ignore in victory what we would pay attention to in defeat. We're going to do that in the final segment. There's some things the Texans need to clean up, and D'Amico knows it. That's coming up next.